Good morning. This is K2PCB, listening for any calls.
Good morning, K2PCB. This is KE2GDQ. A little chilly this morning, eh?
You know, I didn't really think of it, but now that you mentioned it, I looked down at 55 degrees, I suppose that is. I really don't mind these cool mornings. There's no snow on the ground, so yeah, I'm happy with it. And I tend to run a little warm, so as I'm doing my running around to get outside, and I actually thought it was refreshing this morning. I didn't think much of it. Now, if I was in shorts and water shoes, heading out to go kayaking this morning, I probably would have thought different as I was loading up the kayaks, but as the sun was beating on me, I'd have in the back of my mind that, okay, in a couple hours, it's going to be pretty warm, and I'll be looking for some kind of shade, so, yeah, not too bad. Before I forget, do you remember Mike Frenzel? He's stopping in for lunch today over at work.
No, that name's not ringing a bell. I can't pull a... trying to picture Mike that worked at... He worked at PCB. I'm assuming he worked in the micro area?
It's been a while now since he retired, so I always forget who started when and who would have overlapped, but he was the micro supervisor before me, and when he stepped down in 2007, he ended up going to second shift and worked a handful of years on second shift before he then ultimately retired.
Okay, so there was probably a little bit of an overlap, because I got to PCB in 2007. So it was, there, obviously being new, you're still learning all these different people's names and stuff. So I'm pretty sure you were already the micro supervisor when I got there. I'm pretty sure. Which I got there in May of 2007.
That would make sense. That would make sense, or shortly thereafter, so, okay. Yeah, that's okay. Anyways, yeah, he's stopping in for lunch today, and so that'd be cool. Thinking about the weather, hopefully it stays nice, and we'll eat out in Jim Lally Park there. Yeah. So what's new and exciting with you?
I got a couple of new books from ARRL. One is Satellite Operating, and the other one is Small Antennas for Small Spaces. So I'm reading the Satellite Operating book. I should know better. You're going down another rabbit hole, learning a lot. So one of the things it did suggest, which I planned on doing, was just listening, just learn to listen and follow the satellite with your antenna. That's probably one of the best things you can do it to begin with.
You know how they have uplink and downlink? Is uplink always one band and downlink always another?
In general, but there are a few satellites that do the opposite. Downlink typically is VHF, uplink is typically UHF, but there's a couple that switch it for whatever reason.
I'm curious as to why they chose one over the other. I would think that maybe from a power perspective and smaller antenna for the satellite that the UHF downlink would be ideal. So obviously a smaller antenna array on the satellite, but maybe for its reception, maybe go VHF up there. I guess you need both, really, right? I guess that's silly. Now that my thought process is about that, because you'd want a tuned antenna for both bands. Interesting.
Yeah, some of these satellites are quite small. And there are a number of them up there. And so they're starting to, the book has given me some names of them. Because I think I might have told you one time I did download an app for my phone that could track satellites. But it didn't tell me if it was a ham radio satellite or not. And so there's like 9,000 satellites up there that you can track. So obviously you can't track them all. But now that I'm starting to find the names of several, I can get a program on the computer that'll help me track them and find out when they're going to be in the area and whether I can get out there and track them or not will be a different story.
My thought is, I'm sure you can, and I would have to imagine you could probably hit something or hear something every day. But I guess you'll find out when you get all the specifics and get out there and try it.
Exactly. I have an app on my phone that tracks the International Space Station, and it would always tell me when it's visible, in the late night or early morning. It hasn't been visible at night lately for some reason. Either that or I turned it off. I got to go back and look. But that was kind of cool to look out, especially in the summer on a clear night, the occasional clear night that we would get, and see the space station go across. And it was, in my backyard, I have very limited access to when it's below the horizon or just when it becomes above the horizon or what they call acquisition of satellite and then loss of satellite. It's a very short window in my backyard. I'd have to go to another. Same thing with satellite communication. I'd have to go to a more open spot.
If you'd have to, go from one side of the yard to the other side of the yard as it goes over to get a little bit more of that access to the sky there.
Yeah, there's a school down the street, not too far. It's about a block away, so it'd be an easy walk. That would give me a little bit more sight to the horizon, so that might work.
Oh. Thinking about your horizon has me thinking a little bit about two things. One, when I was out in Allegheny, next to Quaker, the lake there, we were kind of in the valley. Obviously, when you're in the mountains, you have the valleys, and, that just makes sense how the lake formed, but that also means that that same angle getting out of that spot is pretty steep. So if the weather was, in my favor, I'm actually curious how well that would have performed. Would everything have been, short distances because my hops were so steep coming right out of that area? So, but Allegheny is definitely a POTA activation park. But you can go anywhere. You can go up to the hilltops and, activate from there and do pretty good. And the other thing it makes me think of, and it's kind of unrelated, but not entirely, and I'll drop in a second, and that's thinking more about what's allowed and not allowed in parks. And Larry was telling me yesterday that he went to a graduation party for someone in his family over the weekend, and they were set up Sunday over at Allegheny Creek Park just because it was close to them, and they got a pavilion. Well, the park ranger, I guess he was, if there's even a park ranger for that park. Anyway, guy came through and told them that they had to take down their balloons. And not that they were, letting them go or anything, but they had them decorating the shelter, and they said it was because of the birds. Not only did they have to take them down, but they had to take them with. They were not allowed to dispose of them in the trash cans there. He waited and made them pop them and, stow them away somewhere and make sure that they were taking them home. I thought that was very interesting. This is K2PCV.
That is really interesting. I think we had a couple of parties at Ellicott Creek Park. Well, my daughter did. That we were there, and I think we had balloons. Now, this was several years ago, so obviously policy could have changed. But you're right. I've watched a couple of YouTube videos where one of the guys, he strung up an NFED antenna because he couldn't put anything in the ground. He couldn't drive stakes. I think it was he couldn't drive a stake in the ground, per se. So he put up an NFED antenna, looped it over a tree, which there it would be harder to see. So you might a park personnel might not be able to notice. So, it's amazing what you got to be careful of doing in the parks. This is KE2GDQ.
Accessory I've added to my collection in recent history, but have yet to deploy it, is these sandbags. So I had the spike mount that you can pound it to the ground and screw on from there. That works really good. I feel very confident that it's not going to blow over with that. And then I have the tripod. Now, the tripod I could see in gusty winds tipping over, and the one guy I was watching online recommended these. They're weighted bags for tripods when you're doing camera work, and you put them around the legs of the tripod, fill them with rocks, pebbles, sand, whatever, and that can help keep it from tipping over, and it also addresses that scenario where they could have an issue with putting a spike into the ground. So, yeah, I'll have to put those in the truck. Maybe get some pea pebbles or something and fill those bags in so they're ready to deploy as needed.
Yeah, that would be the one nice thing about if I went to a park like Como and I was doing satellite stuff, everything's handheld, everything's self-contained. I don't think anybody would have a real issue with that. I would hope not, but you never know.
I was set up over there at Como that one day. We were sitting in the pavilion. I had the antenna just outside the pavilion in the parking area. And it was the one sort of in the middle of the park. There's an access road that goes right through the site and goes over to the bathrooms on the other side. But how many people kept walking through that site when we were there? And, what are you guys shooting off bottle rockets? And, no, it's an antenna. And watch the cord. People riding their bikes through. And watch out for the coax on the ground. Oh, yeah, we're okay. Well, you have no idea what you're riding over, but go ahead. I don't think I would walk through somebody's, it's not my pavilion, either of our pavilions, but if somebody's there, I don't think I'd walk through.
Yeah, I wouldn't walk through someone's pavilion. I would skirt around it. And I know there's, because we used to go to Como a lot when we had the dog and walk him there, and there was paths that you could follow. Now, they might come sort of close to a pavilion, but I wouldn't walk through the pavilion if you were sitting there, unless I knew you, obviously. I don't understand people these days. They seem to be, I don't know, I'd call it common courtesy, but maybe that's a thing of the past, I don't know.
I don't know what the word is, just downright rude. But I've got 6:44, and I think Ross should be back on the air today. So maybe I'll relinquish the mic and say 73 and wish you a good day and pass the microphone along. And, we'll talk to you soon. This is K2PCB.
K2NVM, self-entitlement is the word you're looking for. People just don't look at anything but what they're doing and don't care what you're doing. They'll trample all over everything. They'll walk through your picnic if you let them.
73, see you, K2PCB. This is K2GDQ, KC2NVM. Yes, I think that is the correct term, self-entitled. And that's what people seem to be doing these days.
All right, KC2NVM, signing out. 73s, see you tonight.
KC2NVM, 73s, have a great day, and see you tonight. It is KC2NVM. KEC2PET out there?
KD2JDQ, KC2PET. Good morning there, Brad. How are you?
Good morning, Ross. It's been a while since I've had a chance to talk to you in the morning. How have you been?
Oh, believe me, it's not been fun. I've just started getting things back together. Yeah, got the truck back. I got to get inspected now. Now it's back, and I got to get its readiness monitors, they call them. It's got to have all those passed before it'll do an inspection. So I'm trying to drive all those, get them to pass before I can get inspected.
Oh, since you threw a code, you've got to wait until it clears that code now before you can get it inspected, correct?
No, you can clear the codes out right away. It's got to relearn. There's some monitors they're called on them. And it's for, obviously, it's got a fuel trim. It's got a pass, catalytic, O2 sensor. I'm trying to think what the other one is. There's a trim sensor in there, you know, a trim monitor. All those have passed. Those are the easy ones. The hardest one is the evaporator system. That's the one that's giving me troubles right now. I'm trying to get the pass back.
Yeah, that's the bad thing about all the OBDs that are out there. Well, they're all out there. Is clearing the codes or getting them to clear correctly. Because if you took it to a garage, they would clear the codes. And then it would be able to inspect it. Fortunately, I haven't thrown a code on my vehicle or my wife's vehicle in a long time, so I haven't had to worry about that. So you were driving one of your parents' vehicles?
Yeah, I was driving my parents' that had an Equinox. That's a nice car. I was driving that one for a while. Needed it. It drives better now. Matter of fact, it was getting to a point where I was running rough and wasn't running correctly, I should say. Probably because of the fact that it's never been really driven more than a mile at a time. And, of course, I told him to borrow it. And first day I drove it, you know, it wasn't running very good, you know. And then the day after that, about the same. And then after that, it started getting progressively better. So, yeah, the more I drove it, the better it got. So he told my parents, "Well, you gotta drive that thing now. You can't just let it sit." Which is, it's probably been sitting out for. I've got this back Thursday afternoon, and it's probably been sitting for about almost 5 days now. So I don't know. I told him, "It's either you gotta get rid of the car, or you know, do something, or drive it more. You can't just let it sit like that. It doesn't do it any good."
Yeah, I remember when our parents gave up one of their cars and just went to one car. It made it easier, I guess, in some ways. You know, obviously not paying two registrations, two insurances and all that stuff, and two maintenances. And my parents were able to get by with one car for a long time. I know that when I drive my Dodge after it's been sitting a little while, it takes a little while to get it warmed up and everything working. You're right. You can't just drive them a mile or two at a time and expect them to last. They just don't. You got to drive that water, that moisture out of it, all the oil and everything.
Yeah, fortunately, his truck's doing the same thing. You actually see it in the fill cap. You can see the moisture out of that. When I go change his oil, I'll take the oil fill cap off, and you just see the water in that fill tube. So, because you got to drive it more, and like it's not, you're going to rust the inside engine out before you get to drive it. It's like, oh, yeah, I will. So, obviously, hasn't done that thing. So, I'm thinking maybe I will take it for, told him, give it to me for a week. I will, like I said, drive it for him. And between working back, that should hopefully clear things up for it a little bit, maybe make it last a little bit longer.
Yeah, that probably wouldn't be a bad idea. At least once a week, take it for a nice 20-30 minute drive, get everything cleared out, and having moisture in the gas cap Yeah, then you're getting water in your gas, and that's not all. That's not good stuff.
Yeah, eventually he's gonna have to go down to one car anyway. It's a common. He's got a GMC Sierra, and it's a classic spot. They all rust in the same spot. Don't know why, but it's a known problem with them. And his is rusting in the same spot. So either we have to. It's not an easy fix. You have to actually take the whole box off the back. And it's really getting on the top of the frame rail where it's rusted all out. And you got to weld new plates in and everything. And it's quite a job. It's a 2011, so it's up there in age. So I'm like, do you really want to do that or just, part ways with it and be done with it?
Wow, that sounds like a big job to take care of those rust spots. Yeah, there always seems to be a particular spot on a vehicle that is prone to rust for whatever reason. It just probably didn't show up in the testing that they did. And then it's got to be repaired. I know on my Dodge, I must have gotten a lot of dirt and stuff. I did go off-roading quite a bit up behind the fender wells of the bed, and that's where they're starting to rust. Eventually, I'll have to get those taken care of, but I've been focusing on the drivetrain, make sure that's in good running order before I move any further.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm going to do next. I'm definitely going to get my old floor back and running. I think I might do that next year. It'll probably start running again. Probably needs all the brakes and everything because it's been sitting for a couple of years, but it needs to. I've been starting it religiously, and that's been just starting okay. So it's going to probably put new brakes on it and everything, and go over everything, make sure it's good to go, and we'll probably drive that because I definitely am not looking forward to buying a newer vehicle just with all the technology that's in them now. I'm just not looking forward to it. Either there or even get something that's older.
Yeah, looking at my truck, my Dodge, it's been very easy to work on for the most part, other than some space constraints, let me say, where things are, I would have had to remove 8 things in order to get to it, so I just kind of worked around some of that stuff. I wouldn't really want to attempt to work on my Ford or my wife's Cadillac, without having some sort of guidance and not just a YouTube video. I'd need someone that's done it before to help me to walk through it. It just seems complicated. And having specialized tools, it seems like you need that anymore, too.
Well, sadly enough, too, some of your shops, your certified mechanics, they'll go to YouTube for advice, too. So, I don't know if that's a good thing or not, but I don't know. I guess you went done the right way. But, Brad, I'll say 73 to you. That's that time. For KE2 GTQs, KC2 PET. 73, I'll talk to you tomorrow.
KC2 PET, this is KE2 GTQ. 73 to you. Have a great day. It was nice talking to you again after your absence, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. KE2 GDQ, clear for today.